With the beginning of flu shot season, there are questions being asked about the effectiveness of universal vaccination programs. Is there evidence to support the widespread use of the vaccine as part of public health policy? In the October 28, 2006 edition of the British Medical Journal, Dr. Tom Jefferson, coordinator of the Cochrane Vaccines Field in Rome and member of the Center for Evidence-Based Medicine, asked this very question and joins us to talk about his findings. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
How did you approach this question? Where did you look for the evidence to answer this particular question?
I started by looking at the objectives of vaccination campaigns. In other words, why do we vaccinate against influenza?
Mm-hmm.
I started with a document by the CDC, of the U.S. CDC, which is updated every year. It's very detailed. It's actually very clear. And it stated some objectives, and these objectives were prevention of cases of influenza, prevention of complications, such as, for instance, pneumonia, bronchitis, hospitalizations, and ultimately death, and other important objectives, like, for instance, interruption of transmission, and prevention of working days lost. This is for people who are in employment.
Mm-hmm. So you started with that data source, and did that lead you to other sources?
I didn't actually follow it through. What I was after was where the objectives.
Okay.
Why do we have a vaccination campaign, which in the U.S. is nearly universal,
mm-hmm.
and elsewhere, U.S. and Canada is nearly universal, and elsewhere it isn't. It concentrates on at-risk groups, and it concentrates on the elderly.
And so what was the evidence that you did find?
Looking for evidence, I, of course, went for systematic reviews,
mm-hmm.
mainly Cochrane reviews, but not only Cochrane reviews, any systematic review on the effects of influenza vaccine, which had been published relatively recently, because, of course, there were several reviews from the early 90s, which were badly out of date. So they could have been misleading. So I went for recent reviews, and I looked at the evidence that these reviews presented, which, of course, as your listeners know, the evidence is presented in a synthesized form, in a summed-up form, but also it's presented by its quality. And that is a key issue, mm-hmm. as you will hear in a minute, especially as far as elderly is concerned. So I looked at these reviews, and altogether the reviews covered some 170 studies which have been carried out in the last 40 years. The largest review was the influenza vaccines in the elder review, which had data from 96 seasons. That's not going back 96 years, but it's about going back 40 years. But, for instance, there was a season, there were several American studies looking at the same season in different parts mm-hmm. of America, different parts of Europe, and so on and so forth. The reason why this is so important is because each season is different. Each season differs from the previous one as far as the amount of influenza viral circulation, the amount of viruses, influenza viruses that are around, the other viruses that circulate with influenza, and also the type, because as your listeners know by now, influenza changes its coat every year. So systematic reviews bring together the synthesis of all this information are really by a long chalk the best way of assessing these vaccines.
Were there problems with the methods used to design these particular studies? When I read your paper, there was some compelling evidence you were mentioning about how some of the data was used, and that it was not necessarily the best quality of data.
The main problem lay in the fact that coverage from randomized controlled trials was patchy, and those trials that were present were usually quite small and only covered one or at most two seasons. This is very important to understand the limitations of such trials. As you know,
mm-hmm.
a randomized controlled trial is the best way of testing efficacy and effectiveness of a vaccine. But in this case, they were small, and they only had one or two seasons, which, as I said, since every season is different, these were quite insufficient. So we had to rely, and the systematic reviews had to rely on non-randomized studies. I was one of the co-authors of, for instance, the Cochrane review on influenza vaccines in the elderly. It was an exhausting review because 91 out of 96 data sets came from non-randomized studies. We labored for 18 months extracting the data, trying to understand these non-randomized studies. And the answer we came up with is that the effects that we witnessed, that is, the effects on cases, the effects on hospitalizations, the effects on deaths, and so on, could be due to the vaccine. But they also could be due to the study design. In other words, that's a non-answer.
So with what were some of the concerns then with respect to how the data is now being used with promoting a particular health policy? Is there, from what I'm gathering, there isn't sufficient evidence to suggest a universal vaccination program is the correct thing to do, or at least there's no evidence to support its implementation?
I think the latter is, from my point of view, the latter of your two statements is the right one, because I'm a researcher, I'm not a policymaker.
Right.
And I don't make decisions. All I do is I gather the evidence. What your listeners should be aware of is that maybe now, because of the fact that the policy, certainly in Canada and in the U.S., in North America, is certainly in Canada, in two states, is universal, and in North America is pretty much universal, now it is too late, say some, to do any placebo-controlled trials. In other words, we may never know the answer, the definitive answer to this. Or the alternative is that we will learn, unfortunately, the hard way.
Well,
that is, we will learn when the policy fails.
And that's that was a follow-up question I was going to ask you, is that from an epidemiological standpoint, what would be your suggestion to answer this global vaccination question? What should have been done? And you mentioned it may be very difficult to do that now, but in terms of for our listeners to understand, in terms of quality of evidence, what should have been done to ensure that the evidence would be fulfilling the mandate to say, yes, we have level A evidence, 1A evidence to say that this indeed is the right thing to do?
Do trials first, test first, not afterwards. Because if you test afterwards, you are left with this, what I think is a spurious ethical dilemma, but some people may not agree with that, or the impossibility of carrying out placebo-controlled trials. So you should be testing first and not testing afterwards. Rely on evidence. Don't rely on spin. Rely on facts. Don't rely on people's opinions. And don't get carried away by what opinion leaders say. And don't get frightened. Don't be frightened. That would be my main message.
Right. What has been the response to your paper?
Polarized, as you can imagine. Some people were very positive about it. Some people were pretty negative about it, including some personal attacks. Some of the people were quite neutral about it.
Well, it would seem to me that again, when evaluating, you know, the evidence is there. It's not as if, you've presented a paper and you've essentially just looked at the information that was there and are acting as a means of disseminating that information. And you know, personal attacks are frankly unwarranted, as I'm sure you're aware. And that we should take a critical look at things, as you've done. We should actually ask questions and not continually assume that the way we're going is the way we should always go. I think it's actually very refreshing to see a paper like this so that we can ask those questions and perhaps learn from this for the future for other either vaccinations or vaccine programs or medications being used so that things are done properly.
What you are saying, the concept you're putting forward is a revolutionary concept, and that is not widely accepted. It is most certainly not widely accepted. It is a concept which originates in modern times from the ideas of Archie Cochrane and Thomas McEwen, which are at the base of evidence-based medicine, but it is not widely accepted. Indeed, I finished my analysis saying that the words of Archie Cochrane of 1972 in his famous lecture are as revolutionary in 2006 as they were in 1972, because the lessons have not been learned. We are still witnessing the use of interventions which have been either inadequately evaluated or have been evaluated and found only partially effective, or have been evaluated and found completely ineffective, and in some cases even harmful. It goes on, I'm afraid.
Have as a result of the Cochrane Collaborative and the work that it has done, has it had an influence, though, on changing in some way how things are practiced or how medicine is practiced or how people are looking at things? Have there been any results that you can glean from that body of work that have made an impact?
That's a very good question. I think we should. I know that there is an unpublished register of such examples, in fact, in Ottawa, of all places. But I can tell you that I'm not sure that decisions on vaccines are made on the basis of evidence. I can't say that.
Well, Dr. Jefferson, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to talk about the paper. And I think it is a very important issue to have brought forward, that, you know, people can present information and at times end up being ostracized or attacked because what they're saying seems to be contrary to accepted wisdom, except sometimes that accepted wisdom is not correct.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.